With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Guten Tag, my beef burgers. Welcome to the Football Ramble. Everton won at Anfield and Moisey beat Jose. It's Monday, 22nd of February. I'm Marcus Speller.
I'm Jim Campbell.
And I'm Vidushin Hantharaja.
Welcome, one and all. What a weekend's action! What a weekend's action, Jim Campbell, stuffed full of footballing goodness.
It really was, because recently some of them have been rubbish, Marcus, haven't they? They've been really turgid, wet weekends, but this one was great. They owed us this.
This was a very, very dry weekend.
The bloody money they earn.
The weather was nice. the weather was nice in the southeast of England. Vish may well have been in other places. The football was good all across the country. You must be purring.
I am purring a little bit. You know, I've been stuffed with football, but this felt like, you know, going to a Chinese buffet and they've just, everything's a bit, that little bit fresher, you know. The sweet and sour chicken isn't sticking to the side. I mean, some of it is.
You're not going to the Chinese buffets that Pete Donaldson used to frequent in central London.
I reckon me and Pete could do a number on a Chinese buffet, honestly.
Doesn't everyone think that about a Chinese buffet, though? Isn't that how it gets you?
Yes. Yeah, but I think the darkness that resides within me and Pete will be more than enough to to just demolish a couple of places. There used to be a place next to Waverley Station in Edinburgh that we'd frequent, and it would send a lot of people the wrong way, but never me.
Never me. Vish, did you say you think the darkness inside you would fuel you to demolish a couple of places? Are you sort of floating some sort of like Chinese buffet crawl with Pete?
That is exactly what I'm floating, yeah.
Also, why are you aligning yourself with Pete? That's like being a new nation, walking into the UN and going, hi, everybody. We're with Iran. We're with those guys. You know?
Yeah, that way madness lies.
Yeah.
Well, whenever you used to read out Pete's Chinese order on a Sunday, that would be very reminiscent of what I do. I would order for not just the meal in front of me, but for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Not even for the very next day, you know.
Uh-huh. Well, there we are. I once had McDonald's for lunch and dinner for 3 days on the trot. But we don't have time to talk about that now, ladies and gentlemen. Let's go straight to Anfield.
I think that's worse.
Straight to Anfield. There was a good reason for it. Straight to Anfield, though. Everton, their first win at Anfield this century. Since 1999, of course. Their first win at all against Liverpool since the 2-0 win in October 2010, which is, of course, at Goodison Park. What a bloody win, Jim.
Yeah. It's astonishing, isn't it, really, that it's that long and that there are various like caveats that mean it's still ages if you take certain things into account since they've beaten them. But I think, you know, it's really perfect timing for this game, isn't it, from an Everton point of view, because obviously they're in really good form. Carlo Ancelotti does not care for reputations, and Liverpool just look absolutely knackered, like emotionally.
You say they're in good form, though. They did get beaten by Fulham not that long ago.
True. That's very true. But I mean, you know, Fulham are showing what they're made of now, aren't they, mate?
Yeah, it wasn't that long ago. They were also beaten by Newcastle as well.
Yeah, all right, fair enough. Fair enough.
This is quite a damning loss for Liverpool, really, if you think about it.
They're in really shit form. Really, if anything, that'll make it better for Everton, won't it? That'll make it better. That actually, we're not doing that well, and still it was enough for us to rock up to Anfield and like leave with a win.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think Liverpool just look exhausted, both physically and mentally, from all of the chopping and changing and from everything that's being written about it all. And do you think, is there a fear with Liverpool, perhaps just under the surface, that now this title has slipped away, which it clearly has, they might not win another one for 30 years.
Oh, Jim Carroll.
You'd hate to see it, wouldn't you? I don't know about that.
Well, didn't Ole Gunnar Solskjaer say this season that he wants to knock Liverpool off their effing perch? Which is definitely the sort of thing he would say. Although something that I did think on the weekend was... that with all the Liverpool players, you're right, absolutely exhausted and looking quite knackered and whatnot. The only current Liverpool player who showed a touch of class and composure of the weekend was Minamino with that goal against Chelsea. I thought to myself, what a time to kind of be away from it, I suppose. But back at the Anfield in the Liverpool derby, Vish, I think we're enjoying the yin and yang of Big Dunk and Carlo Ancelotti.
I mean, that scene at the end where Duncan Ferguson was shouting into Ancelotti's face and Ancelotti was so unmoved, that is someone on certain substances when his favourite song comes on shouting at someone who's just turned up.
Yeah.
Do you not think it's henchmen and overlord? You know, the overlord knows that the henchmen will never turn on him.
Well, a henchman would never do that to an overlord, would they? It's probably why Duncan Ferguson hasn't been able to find work on the, you know, on the racketeering circuit, because he's just too emotional. But no, it was lovely actually, and
he's a law-abiding citizen.
No, definitely, yeah. We sometimes takes the law into his own hands, but But when you were reading out, like, you know, how long it's been since Everton won, even the fact that Gylfi Sigurdsson's penalty was the third penalty Everton have ever had at Anfield since the Second World War. You know, this is...
And it was a controversial one.
Yeah, we can probably talk about that a bit later. But even the mitigation of Liverpool being in such disarray won't matter to any of those players or fans who have sat through so many beatings. And Duncan Ferguson, his reaction, spoke of someone who probably couldn't believe that this time would ever come, and certainly had reason to believe that it wouldn't be the case. I did think when when Henderson got injured, which was absolutely the injury of someone who had been asked to do so much already because the squad depth has basically been eaten into. When the physio went over to him, I kind of got the impression that the physio was like, right, what's the problem? And Henderson just looks up at him and goes, fucking everything.
Everything
is a problem. Everything hurts right now.
Yeah, I mean,
I've discovered muscles I didn't even know I have, and they've they've ruptured. There's definitely something wrong.
Yeah, I mean, in the game, Davis and Kabak became Liverpool's 18th different defensive pairing at centre half this season, which just shows you how difficult it's been. But take nothing away from Everton, because that Richarlison goal in what, the third minute, was absolutely fantastic foreplay. Lovely slip pass from James Rodriguez. And the way Richarlison, he was just onto that, bang, in the corner, Jim. Beautiful. Bloody beautiful.
Yeah, it was. It was really clinical, wasn't it? It really sort of set their stall out. And I think actually that was what was impressive about Everton throughout the game. They never really looked like losing, did they? Or even sort of getting pegged back. It was a very, very sort of controlled, mature performance from them.
Even from Jordan Pickford.
Yeah.
Quite nice, wasn't it?
It was. He'd not had the best of times recently.
Not against Liverpool either.
And specifically in this fixture. At Anfield, of course, you know, making that error. But Ancelotti said that this is the Pickford everyone knows. It's the Pickford we want to know, I think.
Yeah. There's another Pickford that Ancelotti will probably get to know at some point.
But it was a great performance, though, Vish. He's been under a lot of pressure. Olsen's been in the side a little bit as well. So, especially in that position as goalkeeper, I think a goalkeeper can lose confidence quite quickly. And if you're taken out the side, you know, it can. It's obvious when you are. You know, you can't be brought on for the last 20 or something like that. So to come in for that fixture and produce that performance is very encouraging for him.
Yeah, especially off the back of what happened at Goodison Park and the conversations around him. I do wonder, actually, this is, you know, with fans in, this is absolutely the kind of game where he is, you know, targeted to no end by, you know, just, you know, do you remember the discussions after, you know, that injury to Virgil van Dijk? I reckon they would have been, you know, he would have had a seriously rough time. And obviously with no fans, it made it a little bit easier. But yeah, I was really impressed by how clear-minded he seemed to be, which is not something you say very often about Jordan Pickford. And, you know, excuse me, he made some, you know, very good saves. I think, moreover, as you say, this is the kind of Jordan Pickford that we want to know, because I think coming into the Euros, there was that sense of, geez, is he still number one? And I think it'll take more than that performance to remind people of why Southgate has such faith in him. But yeah, I was pretty happy for him in isolation of it all, because I thought it was a very mature performance, yeah.
Yeah, what did you think of the penalty then, Jim? Klopp said about the penalty, I wanted to talk to the referee after the game, but he'd left already.
Yeah,
I mean,
I'm surprised. Yeah, it's basically the reason it's happened is because the intention has come out of the laws, hasn't it? So I think with that in mind, you know, he has denied an opportunity.
It looked very harsh.
Not intentionally. I mean,
if Trent Alexander is going to put his skull there, then someone is going to knee it in the back of the head.
Would you say it was a bit of skulldiggery, Fish?
Skulldiggery, surely.
Yeah, that's right. There was a computer game called Skulldiggery.
You said that with a lot of skull smuggery, I thought.
Oh, very good. and of course, you're a skull sluggery. But if that works. Let me have it. It's only a Monday. I haven't got going yet. The penalty was given, though, because of that sort of flick of the right boot, wasn't it? That's what when it was really heavily analysed on television afterwards, and you saw all the replays, that to me seemed the only way, because if he's just hit his knee off the back of his head, it is incredibly harsh, I think.
Yeah.
But they said that little flick of the right foot, I mean, again, you could then argue, well, was that intentional? Did he sort of know what he was doing? He seemed in a bit of a heap and he'd just taken a blow on the back of the head.
Yeah, it's all a mess. Since they changed the penalty laws, it seems to be like every week there's some new confusing thing where it's like, oh, does this apply? Does that apply? And this was certainly one of those. But I think overall, I mean, Calvert-Lewin has been denied a goal scoring opportunity because of an opponent there, be that by, you know, accident or design. And if that is what the rule says, that's what the rule says. And you know, I think they probably need looking at again at the end of the season. But there we are.
Yeah, Marcus, you said it was analysed to death on, you know, on TV Arsford. It wasn't analysed particularly, you know, stringently by the referee when he went over to the VAR screen, did it?
Yeah,
that was incredible. I mean, like, obviously, if he's sure that he's made the right decision, then he doesn't need to check it for very long. And I think it was quite refreshing, but it was the way that he ran over, leant in, had a look, and then as if he was checking himself out in the mirror. It was like, yeah, all good, brilliant, and then went back.
Well, perhaps he was convinced, and yeah, whoever was doing the VAR and just thought, okay, it's a big game, I'll go over there and sort of make sure. You couldn't blame a referee for thinking that in this day and age, of course, because referees have been criticised heavily for not going over, excuse me, to have a look at the monitor. So maybe he was that sure, but to me, I know what you're saying, Jimmy impeded him. To me, it's all about that right leg, if he meant to kind of have a little flick at him and get a little nibble. Because if he's just ran into the back of his head, I think it's incredibly harsh.
Yeah, I did see some Liverpool fans on Twitter claiming that Calvert-Lewin had deliberately run into Trent Alexander-Arnold's head just because he saw it was there. He thought, oh, there's a head of Liverpool. I might as well knee that. Yeah. Seems a little extreme. About Twitter.
I was about to say, I think you've answered your own question there. Yeah. but a great win for Everton nonetheless. A great win for West Ham as well against Tottenham Hotspur. Jim, David Moyes, a.k.a. the ferryman's hovercraft, ascends to fourth and 9 points above Spurs. But Moyes himself says they still haven't hit top gear. Come on! Ooh. It's big talk from the big man.
It is, especially as he's been trying to sort of play down the idea of, you know, looking up the table and thinking about where they could finish. And he's still saying they've not even hit top gear. That's surprisingly punchy from Moyes.
Yeah.
But yeah, a great performance. Again, like, you know, a lot of teams kind of, they go through these little periods. We've seen, you know, Southampton do it earlier in the season before they fell away. I think you could even argue Spurs themselves did it, because there was a point we were talking about them as genuine title contenders.
Well, when they played Liverpool, we were saying, you know, Anfield, it was like, oh, are these the two going for the title? It seems a long time ago now.
It absolutely does. But, West Ham, they keep going, don't they? They keep showing that, you know, they've got a lot to their game, and there's some real resolute kind of dogged determination in there. And they were fantastic again. And, you know, it's not like Spurs didn't come at them as well at periods in the game. They stood up to that well. Bale actually played pretty well, I thought, as well, which would be encouraging for Spurs, like picking through the wreckage of it. So there are some sort of, you know, potentially some green shoots in there. But I think Kane looks knackered. And obviously he's perhaps come back from injury early. I don't know if he has or not, but like people were certainly suggesting that that could be the case. And it's just unusual what's happening at Spurs, isn't it? Because they do look fragile with their defence. And that isn't something you associate with the Jose Mourinho team. So, you know, he defended his methods after the game, didn't he, saying that him and his staff are like the best in the world, and he wouldn't change anything about it. But this is his lowest points tally after 50 games. So either his methods are waning, or perhaps there's something about Spurs having been set up as they were under Pochettino for such a long time that means kind of recalibrating them to change gear and make them a bit more of a defensive team in the Mourinho mould just isn't clicking.
Well, it's interesting, his quotes that, as you say, he said, you know, we're methods are second to nobody in the world. Then he says, we have problems in the team that I cannot resolve by myself as a coach. And then, Vish, he says, but, you know, the players tried really hard. To me, this smacks of Mourinho thinking, if you turn on the players and you criticise the players in this day and age, you find yourself out of a job pretty quickly and they down tools. We've talked about that with Lampard at Chelsea. We've talked about that with Mourinho before, whether it be Manchester United or Chelsea themselves. So he thinks, right, I can't publicly hang them out to dry, but this is definitely their fault and not mine. So if you sort of start to pick apart some of his words, it does allude to the fact that he's quite angry with or frustrated with the players when he says things I cannot resolve by myself as a coach. And then sort of says, but, you know, the players tried really hard and whatnot.
Yeah, I mean, he started that in midweek. In midweek he said that it doesn't matter how good or bad a coach is, you're beholden to how good or bad the players are. When he was discussing the form they're on, which at the time was only 4 losses in 5 instead of 5 and 6. He then said what he said on the weekend. And, you know, I wrote about this last night. And I think sometimes, because we've seen this so often from Mourinho, we can be a bit flippant about it. We can poke fun at it and certainly can say, oh, we saw this coming. You know, it's what he did at Chelsea. It's what he did at United. It's what he did at Real Madrid. But the very real issue here for Spurs, in my opinion, is the fact that when he acted out of Real Madrid, it didn't really have any consequences to the playing staff because, you know, beyond sowing the seeds for Casillas' departure, that only happened a few years later. If you look at what happened at Chelsea, he acted out. And the only real casualty from that was Eva Carneiro, because even Hazard stayed on and won the league with Antonio Conte in the next season.
Well, Hazard was apparently Hazard was apologising to Mourinho when he left. He said, oh, I'm really sorry, I didn't do it for you and all this kind of stuff. So he still had that effect on the players.
Mm. Sure, sure. And then when it was at Manchester United, the three players he really came up against are now quite prominent parts of this Ole Gunnar Solskjaer team: Luke Shaw, Anthony Martial, and at the end of his tenure was Paul Pogba. Now, the issue with Spurs, I think, is the fact that at all those clubs, all those players were pretty happy with where they were and got a sense that they could outlast Mourinho anyway.
Yeah.
At Spurs, though, you know, you've got Alderweireld, who is now just on the bench. You've got Dele Alli, who he's trying to force out the door. There was some whiff of a rumour that Song Heung-min was, you know, looking around, and naturally he's going to have any suitors. Harry Kane seems to be, you know, well in on Mourinho as one of his allies, but 28 this year, if he thinks this is going to continue, he's probably going to have eyes for elsewhere. Mm-hmm. And Spurs are just in a position now and are a club of that ilk where players do tend to look elsewhere. There are greener pastures around you, and not just because you're sat ninth, but because you've got a guy there, Mourinho, who's just, you know, he's swinging punches as he usually does at this phase. And Spurs fans might end up be the one losing, because everyone's talking about whether Levy's going to pay this astronomical compensation fee. But that's probably worth paying, considering you could potentially lose a lot of your prime assets that are, you know, let's face it, pretty irreplaceable.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you compare this, Fish, to the feeling at that club and the way the players are, you know, the body language and whatnot. You compare that to West Ham. Jay Lings is starting up the band. For crying out loud.
It's brilliant. I mean, I love it when he...
He just... I'm loving this. We thought that perhaps that he was just one of those players that was maybe just content to sit on the bench or not even on the bench sometimes and pick up his wages. Perhaps he was for a bit, I don't know. Needed a move and whatnot. But Jim, this is glorious stuff from the big man.
It's great, isn't it? I mean, I don't know if he ever seemed like a player that was content to sit on the bench, because as we know about Jesse Lingard, he's full of energy, isn't he? And that translates to how he plays on the pitch when he does play. So it's I'm delighted for him. I also, you know, we touched on it before, but he's got this reputation as being a little bit annoying, a little bit, you know, like silly with the dancing and like you know the Jay Lings hand sign and stuff. But actually, just to see him reveling in it and see him enjoying it, it's just straight up nice.
But he can't be that annoying. Look at the way he's kind of got them all going. I mean, exactly. Fish, have you ever seen a guy, a loanee, move to a club, have such an impact straight away, and literally he's getting everyone involved in his celebrations? He's like a bloody Pied Piper.
Has Declan Rice ever seen a set of drums before?
That's I don't I think so.
What the hell was that?
What
I love is the fact that Lingard got to celebrate twice as well.
I know, that was incredible. That was incredible.
He's like, I love VAR. It's absolutely brilliant. Yeah. What, two set? Amazing. That's what he
brilliant.
Wants.
I love seeing him set off on that banter canter. Oh. You know it's going to just scare defences.
Yeah. He's going to start for England. Kind of Lingard... He's starting for England in the Euros. Let's be honest. This is what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Jim, are you Lingard neutral now after what he did at the Emirates to now see him do that in front of Mourinho against Spurs?
That's a good point. I think. Yeah, you know what? I think he's been in purgatory for long enough for me. So yeah. I am now. I'm back to Lingard neutral. You know what? I'm pro Lingard.
Yeah,
I think you have to be full circle.
I think you have to be. While we're suddenly grilling you, Jim, what did you think of your mate Jamie Redknapp saying West Ham are benefiting from not having their fans around?
I mean, I completely agree. Yeah, 100% agree.
Yeah,
and I think a lot of West Ham fans would as well. Those that have been in the stadium and get frustrated by how quickly the fans can get restless. And I speak as a fan of a club where that's the same as well. Mm-hmm. And it sometimes can affect. Clearly, it affects the players on the pitch. They're only human beings, and we've seen that playing without fans has had various effects on teams throughout the season. And yeah, I think it's the case. And also, I think part of it is because of the stadium as well, because the stadium is a weird setup for fans to watch football. And I think any club would have a disconnect between their fans and the team if they were in that club. It's not just West Ham, but I think they are certainly benefiting from it. Absolutely.
Yeah, there's. You only need to see the the United game, Manchester United game that they hosted at London Stadium when we had that window where fans were back when COVID went on holiday. Mm-hmm. And at the end of that game, you know, bear in mind that you'd have to be one of the lucky few to get a ticket there. The anger at the end of that, specifically towards Sebastian Haller as well, there were two blokes who got within, it was only about, you know, 60 yards of Haller when he was coming out to be substitute, and they ran across and they were giving him absolute pelters. Mm-hmm. And obviously in a stadium, in a, you know, near empty stadium, not only could you hear it, but Haller could hear it so clearly as well. Yeah. And that was in a game where they dominated for the first start and then, you know, spurned a 2-0 lead. So I totally agree with Redknapp. And as Jim said, I think a lot of West Ham fans would agree as well.
Do you agree?
Why
with...
are people like that?
Oh, well, do you agree with Harry Redknapp, though, Vish, who claimed that Craig Dawson is the signing of the season? I mean, since his debut 11 games ago, West Ham, they've only conceded 8 goals. Could barely get a game for Watford in the Championship, but he's come in. He was great against Spurs.
I mean, yeah, he could be, but I mean, he's,
you don't sound
he's not
convinced. If I'm honest,
I mean, he's not. It's just something interesting to say. But no, he's been good. He nearly scored yesterday as well. Got on the end of a header that was straight at Lloris. But I mean, that, with all due respect to Craig Dawson, that speaks of how well organised West Ham are, because they've had, you know, the issues. Ogbonna was a big loss to them, and mm-hmm. yeah, he slotted in. Masuaku and the way they played with that three, and then Masuaku out wide, where Cresswell was acting as, you know, the left sided centre back. He was a big loss. So they've, you know, we can talk about how they've been relatively lucky with injuries to, you know, to their senior players, but you know, it's credit to Moyes and the system he's cultivated there, where people can come in and, you know, the different systems that he's been able to work with. So, you know, Dawson, I mean, he's not better signing than Kufal or Suchek at all. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's been all right, yeah.
But it is nice, though, to have an Olympian playing at what was the Olympic Stadium.
It
Craig
is,
Dawson,
yes.
Of course, played for, yeah. You know, Great Britain at the Olympics, which is just delightful, of course. Right, ladies and gentlemen, let's have a quick break.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
This week at Sukarnov.
On the Luke and Pete Show, Luke introduced me to some bizarre animal warfare.
In the 70s, there was a
I can't remember to say this, but I promise you it's true. There was a war, an actual war, between rival chimpanzee clans that went on for over 4 years.
Meanwhile, on abroad in Japan, Chris is facing off against a natural disaster.
So the same day that I'd run out of fuel, right, I was like, well, I made it in one piece. Thank you, God. And then, like, 5 hours later, the worst earthquake I've ever experienced. It was a 15-storey building shaking from side to side. It went on so long, I was like, this hotel's coming down, and I don't want to be in it when it does.
Listen to Abroad in Japan and the Luke and Pete Show, available on your favourite podcast player.
All that and a whole lot more at Sukarnov.
Go around the Premier League and ask all of the Premier League managers, do you play the looky-likey game? And if they give you a boring answer, we'll drive down and we'll slap them with a wet fish.
Welcome back to the Football Ramble, everybody. Now, let's see how we got on in Betway's 4-to-score this weekend. Entry to Betway's 4-to-score is free, of course, each week. Pick the first goal scorer in Betway's 4 selected matches for your chance to win the weekly £50,000 jackpot. Make sure your selections are submitted before the first game. Further T's and C's apply. In Game 1, West Ham versus Spurs, I picked Song Heung-min, and of course it was Mikel Antonio. That wiped us out straight away, sadly. Oh dear, I did try. Game 2, Aston Villa against Leicester. Vish picked Harvey Barnes. It was, of course, James Maddison. Barnes did score, but not the first goal. It's the first goal scorer that we're interested in. In Game 3, Arsenal versus Manchester City, Jim quite rightly picked Raheem Sterling. Jim knows his onions, as he's an Arsenal fan and knows what to expect. And in Game 4, Manchester United versus Newcastle, Luke picked Marcus Rashford. It was indeed Marcus Rashford, so we equaled our best tally of 2 out of 4. I'm pretty sure that was our best tally. 2 out of 4. I don't think we've ever got 3. So we'll be back with another round of Betway's 4-to-score on the preview show this Friday. But Jim, it's better showing, but still we've come up short.
I would argue, Marcus, that's the closest we've ever come, because you mentioned that you would have gone for Mikel Antonio had you known he would be fit, and you played it safe and he ended up being fit. Mm. Vish, you mentioned James Maddison and said it was a toss-up between the two. I even predicted on the Patreon live stream that we did recently that Raheem Sterling would score within the first couple of minutes. So that counts as something, doesn't it? But I think, you know, that that's the best we've done.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Give us 25 grand.
Signs of improvement. Yeah.
It's all or nothing.
Give charity 25 grand.
Let's be clear. It's all or nothing, I'm afraid, gentlemen. And once again, we got nothing. All right. Let's have some emails. Just email the show at footballramble.com. Right now, so Peter, Vish, or Kate, or Jules, or Jim, or Andy, Luke, all my kids can read it out. Well done. We have an email from Brett. No surnames. I'm a little bit suspicious here, but I will read it. With Micah Richards trying to get a road trip series going with Keno, Roy Keane that is, who else would you like to see paired up and road tripping?
Ooh.
I'd like to see Fergie and Wenger in the south of France on a wine tour, or Kate and Luke touring high society events. I do like the idea of Fergie and Wenger. I think that would be lovely.
Yeah, yeah. I've had a little think of this, and I would like to see Lee Bowyer and Kieran Dyer doing anything, really, together. Because I can't imagine they've spoken for a while. They probably have a lot of catching up to do.
But would they do a little trip around, I don't know, like various fight events or something like that?
Mm. I don't know. I think they'll go to picturesque settings, but at the end of it, they're always picked up by Graham Souness.
Yeah,
and so whatever happens, they have to apologise in front of him, and then they get in the car and they go to their next destination.
Yeah. Surely you put them in high-pressure situations, you know, where it is really, really stressful.
Mm-hmm. Like the Krypton factor.
Who like sort of snaps first.
Yes.
That'd be quite good.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if I want to encourage this, because we've got enough travelogues with comedians and their mums or dads, but I do quite like the idea of John Champion and Ali McCoist.
Oh, yes.
Now that's
like the trip style series.
I think that's the win. I think that's the win, Jim.
We don't enjoy that.
Yeah, no, very, very good. A hodl and waddle, just singing Diamond Lights as wherever they drive, which would be quite nice. One for the older listeners there.
Ben James has been in touch with the subject, a football manager is an oiled up loose boy.
Right.
Again. A football manager is an oiled up loose boy.
Here we go.
I come to you with a story about a high profile manager. I studied physio at university and one of my friends did a placement at a club where he was managing in the area. Once a week, when all the other players and staff had left, he would come into the treatment room for a 2-hour long massage.
Here we go.
wait till everyone leaves. The youngest that, one stays. It?
Oh dear. This massage was carried out by 5 physios trained to work on the physiques of finely tuned athletes.
5
working,
of them.
Working all at the same time to take him straight to nirvana. One on each arm, one on each leg, and one for his neck and back. I'm glad it clarified neck and back there. Yep. The perks of being the boss, maybe.
Oh, blimey. Mm.
Do you reckon you had to draw lots to see which body part you'd get?
Yeah, I mean, presumably after a while he'd figure out who was right for what limb.
I tell you something,
yeah.
Like 5 physios will go into town on you for 2 hours.
I feel very uncomfortable about that. It's such a power move, isn't it? You work for me. You do what I tell you.
You would be a very oiled up loose boy, though, wouldn't you?
You would, yeah. Quite the measure of the man.
Would it be relaxing to have that many people working on you like that?
I don't know.
If you get off on power tripping, I think it would.
Good point.
I don't think it's the relaxation, is it? It's making 5 people do that. It's having the power and holding it over them.
Right, gentlemen. Manchester City, they won again.
Fuck
18 winning streak. I'll be honest with you, Jim. I think a 1-0 loss to Man City is not a bad result these days.
No, it's all right in the circumstances, isn't it? Arsenal sort of, you know, found some foothold to get back into the game, and it wasn't exactly a terrible performance from them. But someone needs to beat City too, don't they?
Oh, it's ridiculous.
It's getting stupid.
I mean, this is...
I suggested bringing in the government, and Marcus laughed at me, but I think we're getting to the stage now.
Well, I'm just concerned.
It.
You know what FIFA are like when the government get involved? And if UEFA are the same, I don't want us to jeopardise our position at the Euros, quite frankly. You've got to think of the bigger picture sometimes, not just your petty little Mancunian rivalries. But an 18-game winning streak. I mean, what can be said? You know, they're absolutely magnificent. And even in this game, it was, I say, only 1-0. You know, the goal came obviously quite early on. But just the way they played, Vish, they are back, really, you could argue, to their peak best under Pep at Manchester City.
Yeah, and I think you know that they're at their peak best when this was like, you know, rocking up to a race in their slippers. They're like, we don't need to go that fast here. You know, they scored early and they're pretty comfortable with that. And it led to some quite interesting post-match interviews, because to use the post-match interviews in isolation, you wouldn't have guessed that either team lost, because Guardiola and Sterling were talking about how good they were, and Arteta and Tierney were talking about how good Man City were. And, you know, a 1-0 win where everyone's satisfied, everyone's kind of, you know, filleting each other and there's no problem whatsoever. Like, it was exactly the kind of result that didn't necessarily state how good Man City could be and wasn't really a reflection of where Arsenal were, because Man City are as good as they are. So, yeah, it felt like a relatively tame Sunday evening, you know, jaunt, didn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that how you felt, Jim?
Yeah, to be honest, they did. I mean, City didn't really, you know, go through the gears because they didn't need to. It was almost like, I think, I really got the impression that the biggest threat to their kind of winning streak will be them forgetting to win. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It almost looked like they forgot that they could need a second goal. Obviously, ultimately, they didn't. But if they'd needed one, they could have gone out and got it, I'm sure. But they just didn't really go through those gears.
So the tactic to beat them is to take away the scoreboard.
Yes.
Maybe.
Yeah,
yeah, we've got to think outside the box here. I mean, it's a bit depressing, really, isn't it, that when the Premier League is in a situation where everyone's under an unusual amount of pressure and in an unusual situation, that City are so well equipped that they can just brush everyone aside like this. It's just a bit tedious.
It is. Well, Manchester United are doing their best, Vish, to keep up with them, aren't they? Beating Newcastle 3-1.
Yeah. It was. It's weird. When you watch that game, you realise that, you know, you'd often, when you'd have two teams facing off in those two positions, you'd think the more disjointed the game, the more it would favour the weaker team. Mm-hmm. Manchester United don't work like that. The more disjointed the game, the better it is for Manchester United, because they were so weird during that first half. And then in the second, they were like, right, well, probably get a penalty. We'll put a hopeful ball across that Fernandes will get a toe to and Dan James will, you know, swerve into the near post. And yeah, just like that, it was a 3-1 win, and it was. I suppose I could say the same thing about this game that I said about the Man City Arsenal game. In that, I don't know if there were too many takeaways from it. You know, Newcastle aren't particularly good, and Manchester United are able to take hold of flashy moments. And
well, one of the moments was perhaps the young Geordie lad, Shola Shortira. Is that how it's pronounced? Sorry, forgive me there. He got a run out against his. Well, he is a Geordie, I believe, so against his hometown club, but for Manchester United, of course. I'm hoping he's named after Shola Ameobi.
It must be.
Surely.
Must be.
It's
I hope
be.
It is. Even if it's not, it is. Let's say it is. Yeah. We have that power.
It's nice to see Dan James back, though, Vish. He's been in and out the side kind of thing, but he was among the goals again.
Yeah, I think I said this last week, but... I feel like when he arrived at the club, there was quite a lot heaped on him, and he, you know, scored some goals, and there was a lot of talk about him, you know, using that as a platform to go on, and it just hasn't really worked out. And I think it's weird because you want
a
youngsters...
A huge step up, though, for him.
Yeah, no, massively so. And it's weird because you want youngsters to play games so they can develop, but he was almost an argument that you can play too many games as a youngster, because sometimes you do need to go away and rediscover, discover for the first time little tricks of the trade. For example, if it's going on your left foot early so that you give people two different angles to worry about, or it's just, you know, just developing your general style of play, because it's quite hard to do that under the glare of the spotlight. And I think that's why he's struggled and been, you know, he's kind of played within himself a few times. And it's nice to see him not just score goals, but also he's probably the most diligent player United have on that side, because Aaron Wan-Bissaka's form, you know, had been a bit patchy because he just has to do all the defending. Whereas with Dan James, he's got a bit more support in that regard, and just his legs as well. He's so quick that he just stretches play at will. And it's I'm really happy for him. I'm still not entirely sure if he is gonna emerge outright as a starter for Manchester United, but I'm at least happy that he's getting some of his right now. Yeah,
will he get more or less minutes when the club inevitably sign Jadon Sancho though?
Well, he could be one of the five masseuses for Jadon Sancho. You know,
it's like Unai Emery and his five captains.
Yeah, maybe that's it. I mean, I tell you what, though, is Jadon Sancho, is he sort of subtly touting himself for a move to Chelsea? Because there was a lot of chat, wasn't there, when Thomas Tuchel took over, that Tuchel being a German speaker, for some reason, you know, that would be a good thing, because, you know, Werner... obviously Rudiger's there, and Kai Havertz, who I think all three of them have a good... Well, certainly Rudiger, but the other two have a good grasp of English. But there was talk about the German language being important, whereas Jadon Sancho did a weird interview recently where he seemed to put a German accent on but speak English, sort of Steve McLaren style. So is he sort of making a very slow transition from English to German? Is that what's happening there, Jim?
I really don't know, because I don't understand, because Joey Barton did this as well, didn't he, in that interview
where he
put on a French accent. And don't these players know that, you know, if, say, for example, you're on holiday in Spain, that loud English becomes Spanish? Like, why aren't they just speaking loudly in English? That makes foreigners understand English, isn't it? So if that's the problem, it's very, very strange. I mean, it could be that Sancho has a bad case of Roman accent syndrome, which is a thing. You know, people often pick up the accent of where they are, but it does seem quite extreme.
Yeah, I think that's it. I think to be fair, like I don't know what his German's like, but if you're speaking English in a country who perhaps when they hear English, it's through their own learnings or their own accent or other people, blah blah blah. Then he's just trying to assimilate, isn't he, Vish? That's all he's doing.
Yeah, I mean, I actually do something similar with members of my family who can't really speak English. Like, I'll affect the Sri Lankan accent when I speak English.
Right.
I like to say it helps, but maybe that's just the little Englander in me. Because whenever they can't understand me, I just trash the place. and they get the fucking message then. Yeah. So,
Vish is coming, or put the garden furniture away, for crying out loud.
Where's the tea gas? We ran out of tea gas last time, didn't we?
Gentlemen, yes, back to where we were talking about. So yes, Newcastle lost, and they're now looking over their shoulder because Fulham are coming, Jim. Fulham are on the march. 7 points from their last 9 potential points. I'll tell you what, Scott Parker's got them on the march.
He does. Yeah. I mean, it was happy. I mean, it's a good time to play Sheffield United because
it's this season.
Because it's this season. And Chris Wilder keeps saying things like, well, they're not going to have to be. Not going to worry about us for much longer. He's basically become a moody teenager, isn't he? They've given up, it
That's
seems.
Right, yeah.
He's just had enough. So, yeah, but it was a good performance from Fulham. And they've done a good job to separate themselves from West Brom and Sheffield United down there and really kind of put some pressure on Newcastle. And I don't know, they look the most dynamic of the teams down there. And I feel like they've got a good chance, like a genuinely of I think I feel like they've got a better chance on Newcastle actually at the moment, having watched both teams play recently.
It was interesting that Wilder in midweek when he was complaining about do-gooders and lefties, and he goes and gets turned over by some champagne socialist from West London.
Yeah,
you couldn't write that, could you?
Yeah, very enjoyable indeed. I mean, I thought that let's be honest, you know, Fulham. They can defend all right, Fulham, considering how Parker's taken them from the start of the season, as I mentioned a number of times already. They don't struggle to keep the ball, but they do struggle to put the ball in the back of the net. And yes, they won this game, but it was a slender win and they were fortuitous with the ball getting sort of tangled up between, was it Ampadu and obviously Lookman scored. So it's slightly fortunate, and I think some people thought, oh, well, Fulham were good value of the win because they had the ball and they looked the more likely. But really, I reckon if you watched it back, Sheffield United probably created maybe one or two clearer goal-scoring opportunities. I mean, they should have had, was it Ender Stevens, down the left flank, who got on who was through. And then there was one or two others. So, you know, I think with Fulham, they have had a good time of it of late, but not being able to score that much, I think, is going to be a big problem.
Yeah.
But they've put themselves in a great position now, or I say a great position. They're still in the relegation zone, but a much better position. But I mean, talking about Chris Wilder getting annoyed, he's rightfully annoyed that they didn't get that penalty late on. And again, an enormous slice of luck for Fulham.
Mad.
Because how that wasn't given, I do not know.
Yeah, it smacks of there being so many like tweaks to the rules that like. I don't know, logic's been lost with a lot of them. How's that not a penalty?
Well, I mean, did you see Graham Souness going absolutely mental about this, saying the problem we have with referees is they're just not very good. I honestly don't know where we get them from. The quicker we get a different setup for referees and get some ex-players into the game, because we're in danger of killing our Premier League with these referees. Ex-players.
Ex-players. Who's going to want to do that? Can you imagine?
It's Manchester United versus Newcastle United, and the referee today is Alan Shearer. Okay, brilliant.
That's the way to get better referees. If you lay into batter and demoralise the current crop of referees, then the next crop are just going to come through, aren't they?
Yeah,
they're going to be rushing to your door to get a job in this industry. Yeah,
ex-pros being referees. How on earth could that work well? All the fans sitting there going, oh yeah, this is fine. He won't remember the time when we absolutely berated him as a player.
Yeah. I mean, presumably he's not going to mean Premier League players, is he? Because they've got no reason to put themselves through that. But even so, like...
God.
It also implies that refereeing is an easy thing that you can just pick up in a summer between retirement and starting your career as a referee.
To be fair, if management is, then why can't refereeing be?
Yeah, that's very true. I mean, I think that... But it will get to the point where, you know, nowadays when a referee... is appointed, then they say to the referee, you know, who do you support? That kind of thing. They have to sort of declare who they support. Whereas as an ex-pro, it's like, right, well, who did you play against? Who did you play for? Yeah. Did they ever come against that? It's almost as if it's the rantings of a madman.
So do you think it would need to, if it was an ex-player, they would have to play for a lot of clubs or just one? Do you know what I mean? So like, would Robbie Keane be a really good referee?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Would Gary Neville be a good referee?
Gary Neville.
Gary Neville would be an amazing referee. You know he would. You know he would. He'd work so hard on it.
I think he might. But could he be like one of those dads who... People often think, you know, if the dad's son plays for the team, they get preferential treatment. Actually, sometimes the dad can be harsher on his son. And I think Neville would be like that for Manchester United. He would really, really like... given plenty.
Yeah, well, but if you're not going to square it, right, you're not going to get a penalty. It's like, what? Yeah. How does that work? Yeah,
it's very true. It's very true. Right, gentlemen, there's been some happenings in the Football League. Firstly, we go to Bournemouth. We've talked about their coaching position for a little while because there was people going, Thierry Henry was mentioned and all this sort of stuff. Well, Jonathan Woodgate's been appointed Bournemouth head coach until the end of the season. Well done, Wooders.
Yeah, it'd be nice to see him. I'll see him have a go down there. And they've got to, you know, it's a shame that it didn't work out for Tinder, isn't it? But it's a bit of a kind of
the app.
there's a bit of a sort of Eddie Howe legacy there, almost a legacy appointment. And actually, it's often better to just move on from those things rather than to kind of keep them around.
It's a real show of faith, that. Do you want to do this until for a couple of months? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Cardiff visit Bournemouth on Wednesday. Cardiff are on a 5-match winning streak under Big Mick McCarthy. Speaking of loving managers, Nigel Pearson is reportedly set to become new Bristol City manager until the end of the season after talks. They described the talks as they have been accelerated.
That's like a hostage situation.
Does that mean he's lost his temper? He's losing his temper?
That smacks to me like they were considering Nigel Pearson as an appointment, and they very quickly accepted that Nigel Pearson is their manager. It's like it's out of their hands now. They've realised they were never in charge of this decision.
I've told you how much money I want. They'll get on with it.
just phoning through to the receptionist. Sorry, could you bring in a pen? I left a pen in there. Yeah, he's holding it to my throat. Could you bring in another pen?
Well, Bristol, which is a fine city and a very enjoyable place to visit, the city is about to change quite rapidly in terms of the vibe, because you could have Nigel Pearson coming in there, and then Joey Barton is set to become Bristol Rovers boss. I mean,
that's so at odds with the nature of Bristol.
I know.
It's such a chilled place.
Yeah.
You know, it's, yeah, lovely weekend away.
I mean,
and those two at the helm.
There is a spare plinth there, Vish. Are we going to see a statue of one of them?
No, they're going to fight to death to see who throws who in the river.
Yeah. They'll both end up in the river, but somehow the river will lose.
Amazing. We've got to have an honourable mention, surely, for James Coppinger, for Doncaster Rovers. He's 40. He designed a special charity goal kit for Rovers this weekend to mark his 17th and final season at the club. 40 years old and still playing football. He came off the bench to curl in a glorious free kick in stoppage time to grab a 3-3 draw against Hull, which was absolutely brilliant. It was a lovely
Perfect
free kick.
Stuff.
And finally, gentlemen, Ryan Shawcross, a man that is a synonymous with Stoke City Football Club. He's played in the Premier League. He's recently been played in the Championship. He's now off to join Phil Neville at Inter Miami. What a move, Jim. A match made in heaven.
Yeah, it's a stark change of setting, isn't it? It's exciting. I mean, well, it's weird. It's weird. He's not the player you sort of would have expected to go over there and join the Miami Revolution. But who knows?
Well, hang on, Jim.
I am not one to question Phil Neville's methods.
Well, you say that, but Inter Miami sporting director Chris Henderson said that Shawcross fits the Inter Miami DNA because of his experience and longevity at a club.
Marcus, I do say that.
Isn't experience and longevity things you associate with Florida rather than Miami?
Quite possibly, being the retirement centre that it is. Yes, centre. The Inter Miami DNA, old, tough English centre-halves is what they're after.
It's nice for Phil Neville to go out and get some sunshine before he inevitably takes over at Newcastle United in the future.
I think that to me, Ryan Shawcross, he's earned that move. That is a lovely old job. So we look forward to seeing him there whenever they start. I think maybe next month. So there we are. Right, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, over on Football Ramble Presents, there's a brand new Ramble Meets out today. Mark Pugash sat down with the one and only Ian Dowie to talk about his playing days and that memorable stint as Crystal Palace manager. So do head over to Football Ramble Presents right now and hit the subscribe button while you're at it, you darlings. On tomorrow's show, Jules, Vish and Pete will be in your ears. So do not miss that. Right then, say goodbye, Jim Campbell.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, Vitush and Hantaraja.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from me, everybody.
This was a Stakhanov production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
Hold up.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to this show ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today.